Today is July 22nd, 2009, and this is a special episode of Showbiz Sandbox, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Karen Woodward.
And in New York, I'm Michael Gills.
We're extremely excited that joining us from London, England is Stephen Brook, who is a press correspondent from one of the world's papers of record, The Guardian. He is also the deputy editor of The Media Guardian. Of course, like any good journalist these days, Stephen is also on Twitter and can be found at twitter.com/SDBrook. That's S as in Sam, D as in David, Brook. Back in June, one day after the unexpected death of pop singer Michael Jackson, Stephen wrote an article for The Guardian on TMZ, or depending on which nation you're in, TMZ. Stephen wrote about how TMZ was the first media outlet to report Michael Jackson's death. In fact, as Stephen points out, they reported it 6 minutes before he was officially pronounced dead. The article appeared just about everywhere in the world, including the Washington Post and paid content. Stephen, thank you for taking the time to speak with us in what is late evening, your time. First off, I guess the question has to be asked, how did you put this story together so quickly?
Well, there was enormous interest worldwide over the death, and it really was the type of news that people texted and called each other about. So there was enormous demand from our side of the pond for as much information as possible as to what had gone on. And we were kind of fascinated by TMZ, as we call it over here, or TMZ, because they were the first to report the death, and they got it right. So it was, for media watchers have kind of heard of the website, I think, before, and certainly if you're interested in LA and Hollywood and the gossip scene, it's been on people's consciousness for a while. But this was such a massive scoop that it really announced the website to the world, and everyone over here was desperate to find out more about it. So that was I was duly dispatched to do my best.
And you did a great job. I mean, you have sources here from all over. It's one thing to kind of present some analysis one day after, but you present not only analysis, but a very even-handed look at what TMZ, or TMZ as you said, what that website is to celebrity gossip, and to present it with secondary quotes and first-hand quotes from people who are their sources.
Well, I guess I've got an advantage in this case, for distance, because I was able to come at it afresh, and I talked to a lot of people who, some of whom were involved in setting up the site and had left, and really the only people who weren't that keen to talk were people from the site themselves, and they basically said they were just too busy in the aftermath of their scoop, which I can kind of understand. But I think they're a fascinating story, so I'd love to do a proper interview with them at some stage, because I think that within their site, they're really pointing out a few of the trends and the way that the modern media is changing.
Well, certainly the fact that the internet once again scooped what I guess we could call mainstream media or traditional media is, you know, I think that's one of the things that this particular story of Michael Jackson's death will be remembered for.
Yes, very true. And I can vividly remember the night over here as it was when he died, because my flatmate called me up and he said that he'd heard from a friend that Michael Jackson was dead, and there was this site, TMZ, reporting it. And because I work in the media and I'm a media reporter, I'd know what it was and if it was true or not. And I said, well, you know, it's not a traditional source. I think I'd be a bit cautious. But I turned on the news, and the rolling news channels over here were all reporting and following TMZ. So we've got some very established TV news channels here, Sky News, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch, who I'm sure you know of. And it seemed that for the first hour at least, all those traditional media sources were following up TMZ. But of course, whilst it is a website and it's modern in that sense, we shouldn't confuse it with being like Perez Hilton or Matt Drudge, because behind TMZ is a very old-fashioned global media powerhouse, which is Time Warner. So I think it's this really interesting mix of old and new, because it's not really a blog site. It's not been set up as a small, you know, one-man operation with very limited resources. It's actually part of a very, very, very large company. And it's half owned by the AOL division, and the other half is a production company that is part of Time Warner. So they've been able to use those resources, I think, along with a really rigorous focus on Hollywood and celebrity news. That's all they're interested in, and that's all they pay attention to.
And actually, you do a great job here in your story. You say, but TMZ has also been given free rein to expose celebrity bad behavior, even if that might sometimes cause conflict with parent company Time Warner.
Yes, I mean, this is interesting. If you're a Warner Brothers executive and you've got a film coming out which stars someone prominent and TMZ get hold of exclusive story that puts your star in an unflattering light, it's really interesting. And I think we must pay credit to Time Warner here, because it has not stepped in and attempted to interfere with TMZ's news gathering, which sometimes, you know, is reasonably salacious, if not scurrilous. I think the corporate divisions that this company has got has allowed TMZ to flourish, because really, if they didn't have the stories such as, you know, Christian Bale's expletive-laden rant on set, or those horrible pictures of pop star Rihanna after she'd been bashed up, then I think the site would lose its power to draw an audience, because it's these it's the strength of these stories that, you know, clearly there would be a whole raft of agents and publicists would rather TMZ wasn't publishing.
As you so well point out.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's interesting that it's the sign of a really large conglomerate that is trying to mimic the whole sort of blogosphere and give it a free rein to report the news and gossip as it sees it, even if that's not always in the interests of other parts of the empire.
Well, you know, and some would fault it, Time Warner or TMZ, for being a National Enquirer-type outlet, but online.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that there is a bit of a valid comparison there. Because if we look back over the history of Hollywood and the media, there have always been a person or an institution or an outlet that has sort of captured the mood of the time. So I can remember back, well, only via history books really, to the famous gossip columnists of yesteryear, such as Luella Parsons.
I hope you don't remember them personally, good heavens.
Well, I saw a film once, I think Elizabeth Taylor starred in it, and it was called Malice in Wonderland. I was fascinated by the whole gossip column queens and the power that they wielded and how they sort of managed the agents, etc., to, you know, get bits and pieces in the deals they did. Then, you know, a few decades on, Walter Winchell appeared, and he, again, he was a newspaper man who branched out into TV and radio and was able to command enormous power as well by the way that he reported on Hollywood stars. And then we got to the Enquirer and, you know, in the 70s and 80s, and Page Six and the New York Post were the really powerful institutions. Now, though, when we get to the noughties, and really it's TMZ that is in the ascendancy, and I think that this Michael Jackson scoop has just underlined, A, how good they are, B, how fast they are, and C, now how hugely popular they are, because after this, they've gained so much credibility from the way that they've reported this scoop that for any type of Hollywood news, they're really a trusted source. And we saw that in the way that the mainstream media was quite content to say, Michael Jackson's dead, we don't know. You know, in olden days, what you would do is you'd go and check this out yourself. But for so much of the media had no way of confirming the story, yet they were happy to trust TMZ and attribute the news to them, and I think it was a sort of hour or so later that the LA Times and then Associated Press confirmed that he was dead.
Yeah, and even so, the BBC, I was in Holland, in Amsterdam, when this occurred. So I was kind of on your side of the pond, and I remember hearing the same thing. CNN had just a little blurb saying, breaking news, Michael Jackson may be dead, according to TMZ. And so I watched the whole thing unfold, and I decided to watch it on BBC just because at that point they had better coverage than CNN, and I found it more interesting. But everybody was pointing to TMZ, at least for the first hour, until they really confirmed that something had happened, and more than likely it was not good news.
And what I found fascinating was the fact that these main media institutions, trusted sources, massive companies, BBC, CNN, were actually criticized for being slow out there in sort of Twitter and the blogosphere. They sort of came under attack from bloggers for being dinosaurs. And really, I thought all they were doing was following what is meant to be quite good journalistic practice, which is not to put anything up until you're sure. But times have changed, and the old-fashioned readers and TV viewers have been supplanted by the bloggers and Twitterers who were quite cross and saw it as a perceived weakness that these people were sort of holding back and trying to confirm something before telling the world. So I think that's another shift.
Well, I think it's safe to say that this story definitely put TMZ or TMZ on the map, but it just as easily could have, if it were not true, could have taken them off the map for good.
Yeah, I mean, it really could have horrifically destroyed their credibility, not just of TMZ, but also all the outlets that had put so much trust in it. But I think that in previous, and I was asking people when I was researching the story, who media experts, where they put a foot wrong, where they screwed something up, where they had to retract, etc., etc., and nobody could come up with a story that they'd mishandled or busted or, made a major mistake on. So people like Keith Kelly gives them quite a large amount of credibility in the Hollywood gossip reportage. And I think a large extent that is down to its founder, Harvey Levin, who you guys might have come across or not before, because he's been knocking around Hollywood for quite a while.
For at least two decades.
Yeah.
He's very well known here. And of course, when he was starting the website, he was on every radio talk show you could possibly imagine for months and months, and still does little bits on different morning radio shows here in the United States.
Yes.
Now, how do you think, certainly we kind of know, because based on your story, they have sources all over the place, especially ones they pay that are inside these hospitals, that are breaking actual U.S. law by giving information about somebody else's health. But how did they wind up reporting his death so fast and possibly even before he was officially pronounced dead?
Well, the story goes, the official death time is what the family have reported to the world was the time that he died.
Which was 2:26 p.m. on June 26th.
TMZ's defense of the way that it broke the story was that it knew that Jackson was dead quite a while before that official death time. And they're saying that this is because they've been told that by several people, and their early reports quoted people from in the hospital, a cardiologist, not by name. And then they even had quotes from Jackson's family members saying it doesn't look good, et cetera, et cetera. So their defense for why they got that posting up on the website before the official time of death was that it was clear to people who were around Jackson at the time, paramedics, et cetera, that he was not going to recover.
Well, and what is it, you obviously work in London and live in London, so what does it mean for that city, which was going to host 50 different concerts, 50 nights of concerts by Michael Jackson at the O2 Arena there in London? Has it hit there harder, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, because with 50 nights at this massive concert venue, the O2, chances are, and you live in London, you would have known people who had booked in to go and see that concert. So I think that after the shock of his death, because it was completely shocking, and I remember talking to a colleague, and a lot of my journalistic colleagues were at a farewell for someone who was leaving the Guardian on the night that the news broke, and then people started to get texts, and they're on their Blackberries, and the party, sort of half the party had to decamp back to work to put out an edition of the paper, rip it up and start again, if you like, because it was such big news over here. So really, Jackson was such a giant in the entertainment world. And it was a bit of a generational thing as well, because some of the older media commentators could not understand why not just the popular tabloid newspapers on Fleet Street, but the serious newspapers, The Guardian, The Times, The Daily Telegraph, and The Independent, devoted so much coverage to Jackson's death. And then we had magazines putting out special tribute issues, and then there were supplements in newspapers, in the weekend papers, chronicling his life and times.
Well, David Wilde worked on the Rolling Stone special tribute issue, and
yeah.
I mean, so yeah, you're right. Time, I think, had a special tribute issue as well. Time magazine.
It's the Time magazine special. I thought was fantastic. Amazing photographs and amazing, incredibly well-crafted stories, which, you know, they would have put together over the course of the weekend. In fact, we've got a pop magazine over here called Smash Hits that actually closed quite a few years ago. It was like a teen magazine, which was very popular in the 1980s, and it came back to life for a special Michael Jackson tribute issue. That's really how strongly and keenly his death was felt, I think, amongst, you know, a certain generation of people in Britain in their sort of 30s and 40s, whereas older people were sort of like, what is all the fuss about?
Stephen, how was Michael seen before his death in the UK? My impression is that he was still a huge celebrity and a huge draw as a concert performer, but I don't think his last few albums did any better there as singles and album sales than they did here in the US.
No, but you must remember that Britain is an incredibly nostalgic country. So its history is very important to it. And looking back and reminiscing is also very important to it. So I think that Michael was a massive figure still because of what he did in the 80s. And, you know, time and time again, people refer to those three albums, which was Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad. And, you know, we even had very high-powered sort of academic writers such as Germaine Greer talking about his impact on popular music. And I think the fact that he was black, and I think that he produced those albums that will never be surpassed in terms of their popularity and sales, meant that the coverage here was massive. Tempered, of course, by the flawed Jackson and the allegations of child abuse, and the court cases were also massive stories over here when they occurred. And there was a famous documentary called Living with Michael Jackson. It was actually produced by ITV, the big commercial network over here, which was when
Martin Bashir.
Martin Bashir, who now is a very big journalist in the States, but he did the interview where Jackson admitted that he liked to sleep with children and that he saw nothing wrong with that, which was a, you know, huge worldwide exclusive. So despite the fact that Jackson was rarely here, and I don't think had been here for decades, he was a very big figure on the British scene, because the Brits love their music. Absolutely love.
Well, think about the music that's come out of Britain in the past, even just two or three decades. I mean, you've got every, you know, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, all the way through to the Kaiser Chiefs, and yeah, I mean,
well, yeah, but take that, a filling stadium.
Yeah,
in
all
fact,
on nostalgia.
A diary item today about one of the Take That members has been spotted having dinner with the leader of the opposition, who's most likely going to be Britain's next prime minister. So everyone is into Take That. It's quite extraordinary.
Well, now, you wrote this piece for The Guardian or The Media Guardian, and what is the difference between the two? Your piece on TMZ, it seems, appeared in The Guardian.
Yes. The Guardian is a very well, long-established newspaper that's been around for more than 100 years in Britain, and The Media Guardian is a website that has been around basically since the year 2000, and is part of guardian.co.uk, which is The Guardian's website, and they've got a sort of suite of websites, if you like, much like a newspaper, and they concentrate on sport, and apart from the main news site, there's a number of other specialty areas that The Guardian likes to focus on. So Media Guardian, Education Guardian, Society Guardian, which is all about sort of social affairs and social work. So if you like, it's a sort of subsection of The Guardian.
But online.
Yes, yes. So if you could go to mediaguardian.co.uk, you can find... it's basically a website that covers the UK media scene. So Fleet Street, all the newspapers, the BBC, radio, ITV, advertising. And that basically was set up because London is such a huge media centre that we sort of thought that it was well worth our while chronicling it as an industry. So it's not really a gossip site. It's more a sort of industry website looking at journalists and who's doing what. Of course, this year, for the past 18 months, really, our main story has been on cutbacks because, as in America, the British media scene is suffering greatly in terms of lack of advertising, which has fallen off a cliff. And everyone's downsizing. There's, the money has been sucked out of the system, so people have had to axe programs, they've had to cut back on drama budgets, newspapers, regional newspapers are closing or becoming less frequent or cutting their pagination. Everyone's been affected. So that's been the main focus of the site over the past 18 months. But actually, tomorrow is a very big day for Media Guardian because we're publishing our annual Media Guardian 100 power list. So if you all pop online, you'll be able to see that.
We will definitely place a link to that in the show notes because I'm sure that's going to be a great read.
Well, actually, interestingly enough, with the list this year, which I was quite surprised, is the number of Americans on it and the number of digital media Americans as well.
Well, the digital media folks, that doesn't surprise me, but I'm surprised there are any American media journalists left to actually include on a list.
Well, there's it's looking at all, the media business as well. So
yeah, good
there's
point.
Executives there too, and, Rupert Murdoch, after all, is an American citizen, so I'm not breaking any confidentiality clauses by telling you that he is on the list.
You would be if Lachlan was back on it or somebody else in his family. Which one of his children would be on it?
The question is, where does he appear? Is he number one or number four?
He is in the top 10.
There's a shock.
Yeah.
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 Well, certainly The Guardian, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm sure many, and Michael, you're in England all the time. To me, it's one of the world's papers of record. There's the New York Times. There's The Guardian. There's the, I don't even know if the Australian Sydney Morning Herald is really considered on par with those papers, but there are certain papers in the world that are just the go-to papers. The Guardian is one of them. And I guess is the Telegraph still
The Daily Telegraph has had this amazing story about the expenses of all the members of Parliament in the House of Commons.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And that story went around the world because of the outrageous practices these guys really had their snouts in the trough, and the amount of they could basically outfit a home completely using taxpayers' money, even get the taxpayers to pay their mortgages, and then sell it off, you know, at profit. And the Telegraph is the one that uncovered that story. So yeah, the Telegraph is resurgent. There's no doubt about that. But of course, the brilliant thing now with the internet is that all these fantastic national institutions in Britain are becoming worldwide media institutions because you guys, via the internet, can access them and see the quality that's there.
BBC Radio and all that, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. You can. We had someone call the office the other day, and they're very worried because they've moved overseas, and they're very worried that they wouldn't be able to get BBC Radio anymore and listen to their favorite programs. But of course, with the iPlayer, which is their catch-up service, you can get their programs and listen again anywhere in the world. You can't do that for TV yet, but that's, you know, the internet TV, that's the kind of next thing they're all trying to work out at the moment.
Oh, that's going to be just as huge, especially now that there's tons of media servers where that you can connect to your router and that can feed through HDMI, I might add, directly into your television.
Yes.
It's going to
It's interesting, the BBC iPlayer, which is the TV version, has been so popular that all the internet service providers have complained to the BBC because there's so much demand for it that their servers often can't handle all the live streaming that's going on.
And actually, that's true in the United States as well with a service called, or a website called Hulu, which is owned by NBC and Fox, and now Disney has a piece of it. And all of these cable companies are trying to put caps on the amount of bandwidth that you can use in any given month, with the hope that if you can't use that much bandwidth, then you'll have to keep your cable.
Right. Yes, we've heard about Hulu. We're kind of waiting for it to explode onto the UK media scene.
I think it's actually quite foolish for, and I can understand why it's done, but having just spent a month in Europe, I can say that it would be great to be able to watch some of the European shows in the US, and likewise, I'm sure people in Europe would love to watch some of the American shows. It would be nice if there could be a way where you could, even if you have to pay a little for it, you know, let's erase the boundaries. Effectively.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's change DVDs so they're universal, and let's maybe I won't have to keep a sling box in my sister's house in London just so I can watch Skins and Doctor Who and Jonathan Ross.
Yeah. Oh, you've got a sling box, do you? Yes. Well, that's the sign of a true connoisseur of quality television.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because here in Britain, everybody is desperate for the US shows. So it's good to hear that you're over there and appreciating British television, which sometimes I think certain people regard as being a bit sort of second rate to the
programs. Oh, no, no. British do miniseries, and you know, you only have to do 6 episodes a season, so
yeah.
For most shows, so you get to have the quality over quantity argument every single time.
Indeed, indeed.
Well, I know it's quite late at night there. We're recording this on a Sunday. It's close to 11 o'clock, if not past 11 o'clock at night there. So I really appreciate you making yourself available to speak with us. And I also appreciate not only your fantastic story, which we will place a link to in our show notes, but for quite some time now, I have wondered what the TMZ stand for in TMZ. And you say here that it is kind of a callback to the 1960s Hollywood studio reference to location filming that has come to mean the area of L.A. most thickly populated with celebrities. I had no idea that that was the case until I read it.
Yeah, it's the 30-mile zone. So when all the Hollywood studios were planning their shoots and things, if you were outside the 30-mile zone, then that was categorized as a location shoot, and all the approvals, and I think, you know, the day rate that everyone got was different because it had to take into account the travel. But TMZ, the 30-mile zone, was much more central, and that was sort of, you know, the backyard of the studios, if you like. So yeah, TMZ, that's the sort of central part of LA where all the celebs are, and that's where the website is chasing all the stories.
What's the Z? TMZ?
30 mile zone.
No, TMZ, Z in the U.S. is called, well, the letter Z. However, in 99% of the rest of the world, it's called Z.
Oh, so this is a way of pronouncing Z. Okay.
Yes.
It's just a pronunciation that is more common in Britain and Australia. So when we got Sesame Street, we could never understand the Z. No, it's true. We were all very puzzled by, you know, Sesame Street, an amazing program. It was all kind of like, what is this Z thing? We needed it explained to us. So, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to speak with us today.
Okay, guys, it was a pleasure. And I look forward to hearing more of your podcast.
Thank you very much.
All right. All the best. Take care.
It was very nice of Stephen to join us, given that it's about 10:30 or 11 o'clock p.m. his time in London. Of course, you can always read Stephen's writing on The Guardian or The Media Guardian. We will, of course, place a link to his story on TMZ, or should I say TMZ, depending on which nation you're listening to this in. We'll place a link to it in the show notes, along with links to some of Stephen's other work. Of course, you can always email us. The address to use is dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That number again is 888-567-7263. Until our next regular episode, play nice.